morning, everyone, and welcome to the Fairbanks City Council regular work session this May 13th, 2025 at 7 a.m. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mayor Prus.
I am here.
Mr. Cleaworth.
Here.
Ms. Therrien.
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle.
I'm here.
Ms. Tidwell.
Here.
Mr. Marnie.
I'm here.
Mr. Ringstad is not present.
Okay, first up is Ordinance 6285 as amended, an ordinance amending the Fairbanks General Code, Section 74-36, Economic Development Property Tax Rebate, and enacting Section 74-37 Tax Incentive for Property Development, for Property Redevelopment and Renovation. Okay. We put this off till June 9th last night. Ms. Sprinkle, you want to say something?
I was going to say that I have a meeting with Mike tomorrow morning, and I will work on some of the details that have been discussed.
16-ounce Pepsi, I win.
Anyway, we'll work on this tomorrow as well. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Ringstad, we're discussing number two on the work session agenda here, Ordinance 6285. You're one of the sponsors. Anything to add?
I'm sure I agree with everything that everybody's already said.
Okay. Yes, Ms. Therrien.
I think we should change the date on Section 4 to at least be 2026.
To do what?
To sunset at 20 on December of 2026.
That would be at our next June 9th meeting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll put that down a little
bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Item number three, Ordinance 6283 as amended, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code by enacting Section 10-207 to require vacant buildings be secured and registered and establishing fines for violations of these requirements. So, introduced by myself. A lot of discussion on this one. This is... I don't know if I really want to go through the process of having a person register properties with the city when they're gone. In many ways, to me, that just seems draconian. But at the same time, we have vacant buildings, and it does help us keep an eye on them. So I am having a conundrum with this. Any thoughts? Mr. Ringstad?
I think that's about the way I feel about it. You know, we've got too many of these buildings that have been sitting there vacant with people moving into them and then catching them on fire, burning them. Dangerous facilities. But I'm not sure what to do about it. This is a start. I feel good that we're making some headway, like the gentleman that was in last night. Now as a new owner, you know, he's trying to do something. We've got staff up and working, doing things. Contacting people, contacting owners, trying to go that direction. I guess my thought is that this might be an effort to try something, but I don't know. I would rather be a very light touch than heavy-handed. You know, it's their property, their right to do what they want to do. How do we put guidelines and do something? I like the idea of having something so our law enforcement people can drive by and say, yeah, geez, we better take a look. It looks like somebody's been in there. This is kind of trial and error to see if there's a way we can get some of these properties, get them push people to start paying attention, doing something with their property, and at the same time give us a vehicle to be able to help address the vagrants' problems in them.
Mr. Marnie?
Well, I'm thinking, you know, if we tackle this, the whole city, that's quite a project. So why don't we maybe take baby steps and work, assign a neighborhood or an area town and work with that and then move progressively around the city?
You know, it's interesting, we'll say. Most of these properties that are an issue are actually going into receivership at a bank. And it's not the homeowners themselves, it's a transition of ownership. And that's where I'm finding the issues as I sit in the mayor's office and having police officers, public works, the issues that come up. One of the biggest example is 212 16th Avenue. It's transitioning ownership, and we've had to go secure it. We're talking with the owner who's falling out of ownership, and he says, yeah, go clean it up and put a bill on it, because he's not going to pay it. And so I think what we've been doing is we've heightened our awareness of these properties, and when we see one, we're on top of it. And I just look at this and this ordinance now, and I don't see the need for it right now. And Mr. Marnie, you're right. It's you take a look at a specific area, and it's all about the economics, you know, of the house and its value. And that's what I see from the mayor's office. You're not seeing nice homes or homes over, say, $175,000. It's an issue. You're seeing homes that are going back to a receivership that become the problem. The ownership is changing, and the present owner is not addressing it. Yes, Mr. Marnie.
Well, you know, I walk a lot. I walk my dog in the downtown core, and every neighborhood has
a house,
a home like this.
Yeah.
Every neighborhood.
Yeah.
So that's pretty vast.
Yeah. Ms. Sprinkle and Ms. Therrien.
Okay, so we've had these properties going on like this for decades, and nothing has happened. So this is a chance to say, maybe this will help. Push the person who, like the creamery, that's been like that for 20, maybe 30 years. Mm-hmm. Because nothing on the books made them do anything. Now, if we don't like it, we can vote it down. I feel like this is the time to vote with it. I mean, and public, we haven't had public discussion on this, correct? So, I was just going to say, with public discussion, that may help us work with this as well. It's just not been trotted out yet properly. I feel like this is another work in progress, but I don't want to give up on it, because I feel like some people have to be told to be good landowners. It's a shame. It's actually a shame.
Ms. Therrien.
I'm kind of surprised that everybody's backtracking on this. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important that we take this step. We can change the time limit. So instead of 30 days, maybe give them 90 days, and maybe change the cost for the annual registration fees a little bit less. But until we actually contact these owners and deal with it, they're not going to do anything. They could care less. They're not even in the city. And if it's in a receivership, then have the receivership be the one to register the property. But I don't like the idea of trying to backtrack on this. I've been on the city council a long time, and we haven't really done much with vacant properties. And, you know, there's a big liability there. If someone burns in one of those places, I would hope that you would maybe just say, you know, they'll have 60 days to register or 90 days so that if it takes a while to find the owner, if we have to make sure that they get a green card signed with their name so we know that they've actually been notified, I would be a little worried about that. I really think we need to do something. So I'm hoping maybe we can tweak this a little bit, but being able to let the police go in and take care of people that shouldn't be in that property, I think's really important. So.
Mr. Engstead.
So maybe for Tom to refresh me a little here, what's on our books that gives us authority to deal with these people that, or what isn't on the books that this gives us, other than saying we're going to have a list? I mean, we've already got a list, right? You say we haven't done anything. We've got a list. We've got some of them coming in. We've got a staff person now working on it, you know. So what is this giving us that we can't already do?
Councilmember Engstead, I think the key component of this ordinance that you're considering is that the private property owner gives the permission to the police department before something happens. So usually what happens is if there's a piece of private property and it's vacant or appears to be vacant, there's something going on there, the police have to contact the private property owner if they don't have a permission on file to go onto the private property to trespass somebody. This sets that up beforehand so that they don't have to take that extra step, and it speeds it up a little bit. So I think that's the critical piece. And of course, Chief Dupuy, could inform a council on that, all of that.
Mr. Cleworth.
Well, we've been working on this for a year. I had reservations at first, but most of my reservations have been taken care of by the changes in here. On the first page, we have vacant buildings that do not need to apply for various reasons, and that's taken care of. The authority to grant the city to enter the premise is voluntary. It's not mandatory. We got rid of the first year fee, which was my biggest problem with it. We want to encourage people to register their buildings, and now there is no cost to do that. There is an appeals mechanism to the mayor. I'd like to actually expand that to the council, possibly, as we do with other ordinances. But that would be about the only change that I see to it. I kind of agree with Sue. It's time to vote it in, vote it up, vote it down, and move on thing. But I think it's a trying to keep away from the very heavy hand of government and giving people their liberty at the same time, but also forcing some kind of responsibility. You can't just buy a property and watch it deteriorate and let the rest of the world take care of it.
Any other comments? We'll move on. Next up is ordinance 6305, an ordinance amending the Fairbanks General Code section 70-162 to ensure visible and safe traffic intersections and amending city schedule of fees and charges of services. And this was basically written by our engineer, but maybe Mr. Sanders, you want to tackle any of this? We've made some changes on it.
You guys completely skipped me on this one, so I don't know anything about it. I was texting Bob earlier to find out where he's at.
Any questions on this? Our city attorney wants to try and tackle a bit of it.
So we're all dusting off our memories on this one. It's been postponed for a little bit. I know when we were talking, there was some conversation. I recall Councilmember Ringstead asking some really good questions about, you know, should this, if we're talking about trees overgrowing a sidewalk or an intersection, we've already got a section of code to deal with that. The engineering department already deals with that pretty effectively to move things back. What this is attempting to address are things where maybe fences go out a little bit further than they should. Maybe there's something in the person's yard, you know, a jungle gym or something that's a little bit too big that's obstructing the sight lines. Council had really great conversation about grandfathering and, you know, what we would do. You know, are we going to ask somebody to move their building that's been here since statehood a quarter inch back off the sight line? You know, the borough's code, as I recall, dealt with that by basically making their zoning legislation effective day of forward, not looking back. That was where we left it. I believe that we were comparing ours to borough code. We were asking, you were asking questions about grandfathering, and we were talking about, and Councilmember Ringstead, I need to, you know, put my glasses on, figure this out, but we were talking about whether or not the way it was written was made sense, if it needed to be in the tree section or if it needed to be its own kind of section. So that is my recollection of where we left off on this.
Does everyone have the email from Mr. Pristach in your package? Okay. I'm just going to read it. Dan, it's my intent for this to be distributed to the Mayor and City Council for Tuesday's work session. From Bob. Grandfather clauses do not override safety issues. Traffic volumes, speeds, and use change through time. What was tolerable may now be a liability. Borough code is best incomplete for, quote, visible chain triangles, unquote. Apparently, it assumes both intersecting roads have the same speed, volume, and intersection control in both directions. This is not always the case. See the Fairbanks North Star Borough attachment above. The correct procedure is to use national standards as described in the geometric design of highways and streets. An example of that application is attached. Site triangle for lot 3C above. So, anyway. Any thoughts or questions on this? Ms. Therrien.
Well, every time I try to drive on Cowles, I feel like I have to, like, go about a third into the street to determine whether or not anybody's coming down, you know, the street. I think there is some danger here. I like this idea, and if it gives the mayor the opportunity to determine whether or not there is going to, whether or not it has to be in their yard, I think that's the way to go. But I know I lived on 8th Avenue for a long time, and it is really hard to get onto Cowles. And there's other streets as well. Trying to get onto Noble Street from some of those side streets is pretty difficult too. But I think Cowles is really the example of why we need this. And I know the mayor is going to probably end up dealing with a lot of appeals on this, but I think it's a first step. And, you know, Bob's memo saying that the borough really isn't doing it right, that we should be using the national standards. We can start it. If it's a question of a fence that's been there for 30 years, I don't think we're going to end up having them move it. But if it's a tree or something that can be moved, I think it's worth looking at. And certainly forward, if people are building new properties, they're going to make sure their fences are in the right place.
Any other discussion on this? Ms. Sprinkle?
I'm trying to remember why this came to us. Wasn't this based on snow and piles of snow way back in the beginning?
Yeah.
And now we're into trees and fences. Okay, so that was me just thinking, gosh.
You know, you have two objects. One is movable, such as snow, a fence, and then you have, say, a house, a structure. And over the years, something that was built in 1920 on, say, Third and Cowles now might be an obstruction. Mm-hmm. You know, if this comes to me, I'm going to be looking at, is this a permanent structure that has been there for 50, 60 years, and now the traffic arterial around it has changed? You can't have a person move or amend their house. But you can, a snow pile, a fence, things like that, the jungle gym. That's how I will look at this. So, yes, Mr. Marnie.
So where do sidewalks fit into this? I mean, to me, when you obstruct a sidewalk, that is also a safety issue.
Mm-hmm.
Great point. Yeah.
You go ahead, Mr. Chard.
Councilmember Marnie, our current code does in my mind a pretty outstanding job of making sure that the sidewalks themselves are clear. Maybe there's some room for improvement on sight lines and things like that, but as far as like trees overhanging and things, the code is, in my opinion, solid. The enforcement of the code, maybe that's a different question, but the actual rules in the code are, I think that part is actually pretty good.
And also, between Barnett and Cowles, we've made a priority to redo roads and sidewalks, upgrading them to the latest spec of code. So we can do that. I don't see that as an issue, to tell you the truth. It's that house that was built in 1945, 1955, that the arterial has now advanced around it, grown, where people use that street a lot more. And that's where it's going to be an issue. Mr. Ringstead, then Ms. Sprinkle.
You're making me think again here.
You have more Pepsi.
Uh-oh. Yeah, we're not working on it. So, like you say, Cowles is one of the few streets around here where we really seem to be worried about and talking about with this. When are we going to redo that street? If we're going to be redoing the street, right, isn't it on the plan to do something with that street soon? Is that going to solve half of our problem anyway?
It might create more problems.
But I mean, aren't we like next year?
When's that? A year to three. You know, we're doing south of Airport Road first on Cowles, and
that's next year.
Yeah, then we go north. Yeah,
and then the year after that, we should be coming the other direction. Mm-hmm. And you know, quite frankly, we can put this on the books. Is that going to solve our problem? And then a year and a half after that, we're going to come down and redo the street and would have done it anyway.
Yeah. With the takings that will happen, I have a feeling it will create more issues now. Yeah, that depends on the DOT and how they do it. It just, you know, 6 inches here, a foot there on that street, you have, you know, sidewalks that are from 1960,
but that's,
and
they might
make them 8 feet now instead of the 5 feet. It should be very interesting to see what happens and what's created. And I have a feeling that you're going to have structures there that are maybe in the way a little bit now, to tell you the truth.
I'd like to see exactly, you know, where we think we're going to go if we're going to actually widen that street.
Mm-hmm.
Then get a hold of half of our arguments go away here.
Yeah, we haven't seen the design yet, so.
We haven't.
Finally, really. Ms. Sprinkle.
I think whatever we do, I'm intrigued by this, but I would love to make sure that we emphasize the ability for the person that lives in the city to be able to get around. I, I find that we love to do street projects that make us able to drive faster. And I, you know, the car seems to be supreme in some of our projects. So I guess towards Lonnie's point of view, as long as we can do sidewalks and people walk around safely, I'm happy with this, but I want to make sure it's not that the car is first. Mm-hmm. It's in my heart. I don't want that.
Any other discussion? We'll move on. Okay. Ordinance number 6314, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code, section 2-119A, order of business requiring a land acknowledgement for every regular city council meeting. And this is being introduced by Ms. Therrien and Ms. Tidwell. Ms. Therrien, you want to handle this?
Yes. Given everything that's happened recently, I've been thinking about this since I got back on the council. I think it's really important that we have a land acknowledgement. I know that the council in the past agreed to put a plaque on the wall. We don't acknowledge it. I think this is just a gesture to maybe help relations between our Native community. And I think it's really important that we recognize this. And other communities and entities go ahead and do this land acknowledgement. And I just think it's really important that we do this. The last time I was on the city council, I think I used to do the land acknowledgement during council member comments. And I just think we need to put it to the front.
Any other discussion? Ms. Tidwell.
I agree. I think that having a land acknowledgement, it doesn't solve some of the issues that we've seen lately, but I think it's a step in the direction. You know, I think it's respectful, and I think it's one small thing that might help us build that relationship with a lot of people in our community, and I think it would be very nice.
Any further discussion? Mr. Marnie.
Well, I've noticed being the rep over at the borough, they have discontinued doing this. And my second thought is, I don't think it's genuine, now, this is me, for, let's say, a Caucasian or like me to say something like this. I don't think it's full genuine. I wouldn't be objective to having, say, an indigenous person come in and say it before council. I think that would be more meaningful. But I don't know. I think this divides the city more than it benefits.
Mr. Engstead.
I guess I've been kind of thinking about this in two different directions. One, historically, and looking at it from a perspective of somebody whose family's now been here in this town 99 years. Downtown Fairbanks, I've never heard that this was a significant Native area. This is where the boats landed because the river was too shallow. It was founded basically by a mining community, people coming up here for a gold rush. I looked up the other day our early census, 1900, 1910, 1920. Actually, the 1920 census had less people than the 1910 census did. The 1920, the 4th Judicial District, which is the boundaries have now changed since then, but it had 10,000 people. And it went from the Canadian border across the North Slope to about where the Prudhoe Bay area is, almost out to the western coast, down to the Alaska Range, and it had 10,000 people. I think Fairbanks had slightly over 2,000 people. And knowing some of the people that lived here at that time, I would guess most of that 2,000 people were people that had come up here from someplace else. Now, if you want to go back 300 years, 1,000 years, however long, yeah, whoever was here was probably wandering all over the state. You make a broad statement like this, and can, I mean, it implies that to me that something, this area where we're sitting is, it was a major significant part of their culture. I don't see anything that said it was. Everything that I have always heard or understood is most of the native activities and areas were outside of this, where we sit as the city. The other part that I've been thinking about, one of the things that I have, and I have told a lot of people this, that I feel really good about our group as a council in the couple of years I've been here, is that we're all working together and we're not playing politics. This feels like we're playing politics to right before an election. It doesn't feel right to me. Just because we had a blow up here 2 weeks ago doesn't mean we got to go the other end either. I don't see where we're making statements like this for any other group. And I don't know that we should be taking one group here and one group there and trying to do something to make everybody feel good, just to make people feel good, and you know, at right before an election. It doesn't feel right to me.
Any other
Maybe
discussion?
We look at it after the election cycle, I might think differently.
Ms. Therrien.
I wasn't thinking about elections or anything. I was just thinking that I just got on the council in October. It's been a really busy 6 months, and this has always been in the back of my mind that I wanted to do this. I think maybe the timing isn't perfect. Maybe I should have introduced it in November, but it's not for politics. It's to recognize the people that lived here before.
You know, David, Valerie, I can appreciate that, and I didn't want to imply that that's what you were doing, but it's the way it feels to me. You know, I kind of look at it like I told Jerry last night. I would never question Jerry's ethics, but when he has a conflict and he feels he should say that, that's fair. I didn't mean to say that you, that's why you were doing it, because you got a good heart, Val.
Mr. Clearworth.
Well, we wrestled with this some years ago, and I thought we came up traditionally with how we have handled it in the past. Frank Turney at one time kept coming to us and saying that we need to recite the Bill of Rights at every meeting. And we thought, well, no, but we're going to do it once a year, and we do it in December, which I think is a neat event that takes place here. I think all of us do. All the historical documents that have had meaning are hanging around these walls here. And this historical document is also hanging along with all the others, the Ten Commandments, the Bill of Rights, and so on and so forth. It's here for all to see, and we've put them up. If any council member wants to recite the land acknowledgement at the beginning of the meeting when we have our comments, our first set of comments, we can do that. We can say anything we want to do that at the time, and we're free to do that. And I would respect anyone who wants to do that. But when we handle historical statements like this, I think we need to do it within the tradition that we have done in the past. And I just don't want to see us go around this one again. There is some hard feelings on that and strong feelings on both sides. It's almost like being a bit dilatory and picking at the wound somewhat. So I thought that that was a good compromise, and everyone has a right to do this as they see fit. You can do it every meeting if they want to. But we don't need to put it into our code as a permanent item forever. So.
Any other discussion? Oh, sorry.
I just ask that, you know, you reconsider introducing this again and going through all that again. I thought we came up with a very good compromise in the tradition of how we've handled all the other requests to do things of a similar nature.
This is interesting, but it should be acknowledged, as Mr. Clearworth said, that every council member can give the land acknowledgement. And it was a very good way that we've done it, with it being right outside the door as you walk in to be read. And the person who always gave the land acknowledgement was actually Shoshana Kuhn during her comments. And I always appreciated that. She acknowledged it. It's something she could do. Any city council member can do that still. And as Mr. Clearworth said, we've had many requests from many people on what we should say during the beginning of the meeting. We've always kept it at the Pledge of Allegiance and also an opening prayer or missive. And it's worked. So any further discussion before I move on? Ms. Therrien?
Yes, it says it's not introduced. I'd like to have it be put.
What's that now?
It says not introduced, but I'd like to have it. Is it on what meeting?
It's scheduled for introduction May 19th, this coming Monday.
Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion before I move on? Okay. Jerry, why don't you give us an update on fast planning improvement projects, because Bob is not here.
We had some monies freed up that enhanced what we could do this summer. And originally we were looking at 8th Avenue, Doyon Estates. And then with the monies that were freed up, we're looking at Joyce over in Shannon Park and some of these areas. We've hit a bit of a snag, which I found out about in the last week or two, that some of the memorandums of agreement. Well, let me backtrack a little bit here. When we do a project at the city, we have to contribute to that project, and that's what Margarita does when we put our budget together at the beginning of the year. The capital items are listed in there and the road projects that we hope to complete in the coming summer, and our matches and our agreements with DOT and the state that we will maintain these roads. All the roads I just talked about are city streets anyway, so signing a form to say we will maintain them is a bit redundant. However, there is a snag with some of the projects of the borough, and a lot of finger pointing going on, which I don't care too much for, as to why they got delayed and why that paperwork has not been signed. So DOT has been waiting to go out and advertise these projects for the documentation coming from the borough at the time. And so I went and visited Bob the other day and tried to get a thorough understanding of the situation myself, what we could do to maybe separate ourselves from the borough projects and move them forward, because there's a lot of consternation that many of the big projects are not being done this summer. And the contractors out there have been very concerned about having a summer come and go in which there's very little work done in any of the major projects at all. So these more minor ones are important all of a sudden. So at our next fast planning meeting, we're going to be looking at some ways to get this thing going quicker. I don't want to delay Doyon or 8th or Shannon Park or any of the other projects that we have simply because of bureaucratic ineptness. That bothers me a lot. So we're going to see what we can do with that. I think there's ways to work around it and get some of these projects done, but even if they don't get done, the money is there and it would be moved to the next summer. But I just hate waiting to see things getting done. That's all.
Also, this had nothing to do with the borough assembly. We had a good rolling match with them.
This has nothing to do with them. It's more the bureaucratic side of the Fairbanks or Starborough that's caused this.
Well, it's problems between them and the state, and then and they'll both have different versions of what's going on. So,
Ms. Sprinkle,
are we talking when you say the borough? You're not talking about fast planning. You're talking about the borough.
No, they're part of fast planning, and they get in the improvement project list. They have projects themselves that are a part of it.
Okay, so we have to untangle ourselves from that. But you mentioned big projects not getting done. Like what?
Oh, you know, moving ahead on some of the bigger DOT projects, such as the intersection down here of Airport Way and Cushman Street, and projects like this that, and even ours, you know, Mini Street we've talked about for years, and it just keeps getting pushed back and pushed back.
But is that from the DOT side?
No, partly is from, I mean, these projects are worked on jointly between DOT and city engineering, and it depends on the scope of the project. I mean, I'll give you kind of a worst case scenario. Yankovich Road. When I first got in fast planning, it was 2010, and we were working on Yankovich Road. Yankovich Road still has yet to be done. Wow. And here we are, what, 15 years
later? When I was on the Planning Commission in 2006, we were working on Yankovich Road.
Golly.
And the reason for that is getting right of way for a bike path, essentially. And I've always maintained, in a lot of the communities now, they put the bike paths adjacent to the road with a very wide border. The beauty of that is when you do snow removal, you can take the blades and remove it for the bike paths, the cars, and everything in one fell swoop. The bike paths themselves in the wintertime become snow machine trails and all kinds of things. And they are, to a degree, dangerous. I won't go into all the details of it, but so there's a changing of methodology to move them to the roads, but that's not the case in Yankovich. They were still trying to get bike paths for many years. I think now they finally moved it to the road, but just this last month or two, they finally went, got a court decision on one property they've tried to get their hands on to complete that project. And I go, is it really worth delaying a project for 15 years to get one or two pieces of land to make it perfect? You know, why not do a workaround to some degree? And we eventually are going to have to make the decision on many, because the problem there is sidewalks on both sides of the street. Engineering would really like to see that, and that's ideal. But getting right away on the south side of that street is difficult. And so a lot of it is, you know, I think of our own making, us being government, the degree, and having these things delayed. Some of it is the conformity freeze that fast planning is working under, which we have no control over. I mean, air quality is, we have written a letter to the feds on air quality saying that automobiles do not contribute significantly to PM2.5 at all anymore. The technology has caught up, and we can prove that they don't contribute to it. Show them the stats, and they know that. Wind smoke has been the big culprit. But we are being held under a conformity freeze because of PM2.5, which we can't do a darn thing about. But this is the penalty that our community gets, is that they aim at these federal highway funds and withhold your own tax dollars from doing projects. I mean, the whole situation is absurd to me.
Just Sprinkle.
I appreciate this conversation a lot, Jerry. Thank you for bringing this to us. I think we spoke last time about the Mini Street Bridge. You were going to poke around a little bit on that one?
Yeah, I'm going to be bringing that up at the pre-meeting, the fast planning, which we're having next week, and then maybe at the meeting itself and talk about that. I just want to get a historical view, because when we talked about Mini Street, the Mini Street Bridge was supposed to be a part of the package, and the state was supposed to, you know, put that on their priority list, but that has not happened. We're going to see why. We're going to find out why.
And does the proposed river walk along the south side of the railroad property, is that part of fast planning, or is that part of just our city trying to get a river walk through the airport?
It's a project through Fast Planning. The city's been spearheading it.
It's been for decades.
Yeah, but the problem there is on the railroad properties.
Yeah.
Because the bike path was designed to, you know, cross the river, I forget, down near the power plant. It's been so long, I forget. And it went to the north side of the river.
Right.
It was supposed to go down the Pegger Street Bridge there. And
foot dragging.
No, what happened is they got into trouble with the railroad properties because they're stewards of their own property, and putting a bike path on the river, which is their prime property, if you're going to develop it for residential, you can get a lot more money for a house on a river, you know.
Well, sure, but, you know, that many years ago, this agreement between the railroad and the city was made. It's just frustrating to me to think we pay rent for this property that they won't let us properly design and build. So anyway, I should come to a Fast Planning meeting.
They're still working on that, but you have to have the railroad board in agreement with everyone else. They've got to buy off on it. And you can't force them to do it, but I think it's going to come.
Yeah, well.
But there's also liability issues. They want to know who's going to be liable for this property if something goes wrong. Even though it's their land, they don't want that liability concern.
There's lots of history in that, but the big projects you're saying are tangled up in DOT, Fast Planning. I mean, is anything happening this summer?
Well, I'm hoping to see our projects happen this summer, and we're going to be working on that.
What we'll do is at our next work session on Monday, next Tuesday rather, Bob will come in. If you ever walk into his office, you're going to see a list of 12 to 14 projects. And I get an update from Bob about every week and a half to see where everything's at. And it's just that time of year for him to update the city council on all the projects on the books, where they're at, and how's it going.
Okay.
So we'll do that.
I'd love to have that information. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Finance Committee report. Margarita.
No. We got number 7.
What's that?
Moore Street.
Oh, Moore Street. Okay. I put this on here. Next week also, I'm going to show you a list of all the real estate that the city of Fairbanks owns. And Moore Street is one of them, and there's been discussions on transferring the property to the entity that operates the food delivery system there. Oh, there's Bob. Great timing. Anyway. So now the people who operate the Meals on Wheels, they've had incredible success and expansion. They have no debt on the property. What they would like to do is have it transferred to them. It's in the city's name. Have it transferred to them. And then, therefore, they can use it as a security item to go get debt and operate and enhance another building that they have that is for senior housing. Now, we have most likely two properties, two entities on one property. You have the senior housing on the north side, and you have the Meals on Wheels on the south side. And the more I look at this, the more complicated it gets, because if we separated them, we'd have to go through a survey and probably put in a easement. That's one complication. But the other complication is this has worked so far. And in my mind, taking this asset and using it to go get funding and using it as collateral on another asset and business that is not even in association with this, I find that risky. And I'm having personal issues on allowing that risk to happen. So that's where I'm at right now with this. I just have issues with letting that risk happen that might jeopardize the Meals on Wheels building to try and do some work on another building. Yes.
So there's a covenant on this particular piece of property. It originally required that the property be used for senior services. That covenant was changed subsequently so that it was just allowed to be used for public service. And, you know, there's some details on that I'll gloss over for now. It's unknown at this point in time whether using the property for collateral might complicate that covenant. So it's another thing to look at.
Ms. Therrien.
When you're talking about Meals on Wheels, you mean the senior center?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Beautiful building. Johnson River Enterprise did an incredible amount of work there. And yet across the street from it, you have the senior housing, and they need a lot of items there done. And so, it's every piece of real estate is different. And is this is a different one. This has so many layers on it. So we've talked about it, so I thought I'd bring it up and let you know where I'm at on this. Open for discussion. Mr. Ringstead.
This is one of those, the further you walk into it, the deeper it gets. I have serious concern, as I understand it, the building over here for senior housing next to the Westmark is owned, operated by the same organization.
South Hall.
And they have serious financial problems in there. They have serious problems with the building and needing substantial money to renovate that. I think that probably needs to be done. We don't need to be taking however many 30 units or whatever is in there off the market for senior housing. But for us to give title so they can borrow money against the other property to try and take care of this property, and I keep getting different stories as to where the money's going, as far as I understand that the basic senior center, as it's operating, is doing okay. That maybe the bigger problem is the other facility, and I think they're robbing Peter to pay Paul, maybe, or trying to. But I think it becomes risky, and you risk, I'm concerned about that risk, too. I mean, we could have, I think, the senior center and the Meals on Wheels program operating out of there are good programs for our community, and I think maybe this is a risk that you could jeopardize two other good programs for trying to fix another one, and then we should figure out how to fix the problem over here in South Hall Manor by itself. So I'm nervous about it. I don't know legally. Is it one lot? Is it two lots? Is it three or four lots over there? Whose building's on which piece of property, and what the legal descriptions are? We haven't seen anything on this thing yet. So I'm nervous about doing it at all. And if we're going to do it, I think we need to do a whole lot more due diligence before we even consider giving anybody else title to property the city owns.
Mr. Cleworth.
Years ago, the Ministerial Alliance, which oversaw the J.P. Jones Center, approached the city. And I remember having Marguerite and I sat in a meeting with them, and as they requested us to give them ownership of the building. Up until that time, we owned the building. We maintained the building to a degree. Any of the major problems are taken care of by Public Works. We had a special fund set up for that building that they could draw down for repairs and things. But anyway, we were asked to separate ourselves from that, and we honored that request, and so we no longer have responsibility for that building, and it was a relief to Public Works, in all honesty. So I didn't have a problem with this, with their request on this, that they want to take full responsibility for it. In the past, we've had to cover bills for this complex. When I was mayor, they were behind with sourdough fuel on it, and we covered that debt until they could reimburse us for it. So it was a bit of a problem, but we tried to work through it. the other problem here comes in with the grant that now we have for the Moore Street housing, which is next door to them. And they have a grant to do the, I think, the parking lot and take care of the water problems that they're experiencing there with drainage. And if this does become privatized or so, then there's problems with this grant. So we may have, if you are thinking about divesting of the senior center, then we have to figure out a way to make this grant work so that we can take full advantage of it and do the drainage correctly in that area. But so now it's getting more complicated because of the grant. Have you heard about that? Yeah.
It's layers upon layers.
So ideally, I would like to transfer it, but I'm not sure if now is the time. We need to see how that would work with the grant.
Anyway, next week, you'll be seeing properties that the city of Fairbanks owns, including the properties at Shannon Park, where we have a sizable property there that we use for our snow removal dump site location, and a little bit of excess land with it, whether it's financially feasible to do something with it in residential zoning, we'll start taking a look at. Ms. Sprinkle?
When we get that list, can it also include a map?
You'll have
just so we can see it.
Aerial map showing the properties. It'll be very descriptive for you.
Thank you.
Yep. Anything else on the Moore Street? Okay. Margarita, Finance Committee.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. The Finance Committee is scheduled to meet on Thursday, May 22nd, next Thursday at 7 a.m. We will be reviewing the April 30th financials. We'll be taking a look at the budget amendment, proposed budget amendment as of this time, and we will still be addressing our non-tax goal, increasing non-tax revenue by 10% over 3 years, and we will continue that discussion. And we're looking at primarily the schedule of fees. And we're taking the schedule of fees, looking at when the last time it was updated, and applying the CPI, if you can hear me. Okay. We're taking a look at the schedule of fees now, and we're looking at the last time it was increased and applying CPI, and when we do that, we're looking at $1.2 million. So that is our goal at this next meeting, is to really take a look at the schedule of fees and start looking at some of the other suggestions. And so that's next Thursday at 7 a.m. in the Meeks Conference Room.
Any questions for Margarita? Seeing none, we'll move on to Mayor and City Council member comments. We'll start with Ms. Tidwell. Mr. Marnie.
Good meeting.
Mr. Ringstead.
I feel like I'm in full recoverment from our weekend activities.
Hello, my name is John Ringstead. I've done nothing but bowl and have meetings of City Council. Ms. Sprinkle. Ms. Therrien.
I think we have another legislative committee meeting this Wednesday. I'm only going to be able to do half of it. I'll probably call in.
Mr. Clearworth. Okay. Mr. Sanders, if you had done a workout this morning, you would not have had an issue on that.